welcome to That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by Scientific Triathlon and hosted by me, Michael Eriksson. Today I have the great pleasure of welcoming back Solveig Løvseth to the podcast to discuss her fantastic win at the Ironman World Championships in Kona. I first interviewed Solveig back in July, just before Ironman Lake Placid, and in that interview we did more of a deep dive into her training, including a full breakdown of a training week. So I'll link to that previous interview in the episode description, so you can check it out. I'm sure many of you will want to go back and listen or re-listen to that if you've already listened to it. Two super quick things before we start the interview, though. One, if you're a regular listener and you get value from the podcast, I would be extremely grateful if you could try to spread the word to others who might be interested in it, whether it's sharing this episode or other episodes that might resonate. Send them to friends and family that are into triathlon, pop them into your triathlon group chats and mention them when you're out training with others. It really helps a lot. And I know that a lot of people are already doing this, and I really couldn't do this without all of that help. So I'm really thankful for that already. But just as a reminder, keep doing this. And if you haven't done it before, then please help out. That really helps a lot. Ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify also help a lot. So if you haven't already rated and reviewed, that would be amazing if you could do that. And secondly, big thank you, of course, to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration. They create carbohydrate products like gels, drink mix, and chews that are effective, practical, and tasty, and electrolytes in different strengths so you can choose one that best matches your sweat sodium concentration. We're getting to the time of year in the Northern Hemisphere when indoor training might be playing a larger and larger role in your training. And this can be sweaty, especially, at least for me, treadmill running at gyms when there's no fan directed at you. So if you will be sweating it up training indoors this winter, whether it's in a gym or it's in your pain cave, then bulk up on electrolytes so you can hydrate properly and replace enough of the electrolytes that you lose in your sweat. And this allows your body to absorb the fluids better and more quickly than with just plain water. And absorbing more fluids and not getting dehydrated means you can perform and recover better. So it's a really simple way that you can get a decent improvement in your training. As a TTS listener, you can get 15% off your first order of 2025 by using the code TTS2025 on precisionfuelandhydration.com. Now, without any further ado, let's get into the interview with Solveig Løvseth. Welcome back to That Triathlon Show, Solveig. Congratulations, first of all, on the fantastic victory in Kona. Has it sunk in properly yet that you're the Ironman World Champion?
Thank you. It's good to be back. Yes, I feel like it has sunk in at least almost. I think it's like a gradually process that where you sort of day by day it gets a bit more real. So now I've at a place where I also look more for towards next year season, and but I feel it's still like I can still sometimes just think about Kona and be like, oh, did that actually happen? So it's still surreal in a way, but I've also I've been talking a lot about it and been thinking a lot about it, and it's for the most part sunken in.
Okay. And have there been any changes in your life after that victory? Any major changes?
I don't think it's been any major changes, but it's definitely been more attention than I'm used to. More people just stopping me on the street, basically, and stuff like that. And more opportunities, of course, with sponsors and stuff like that. So maybe it has definitely made the next few years a bit more just, I guess, predictable in terms of funding. So that has definitely been a perk of it.
That's good. Yeah. I know you said after the race that you didn't, or I think this is correct, you didn't really have any expectations to be fighting for the win. But what were your expectations going into the race, if you had any?
Yeah, I didn't really have any very specific goals, but I did think that a podium could be possible if I had like my best day. I think a top five was something I was thinking was like quite realistic if I had a good day, and a podium could be possible if I had a really good day. But I didn't really go into the race with a goal of winning it at all. I think just because when I looked at the start list, it was so many people that I realistically didn't think I had a chance of beating, and then I was thinking, like, you never know what will happen in Kona, of course. And like, if some people don't have the best day and I have a really good day, then a podium is possible. So I was like fairly confident going into the race, and I felt really good in training. And I was, yeah, having just a really optimistic mindset, I think. But yeah, still, I didn't expect to win.
Were you more focused on your own performance, on you having your best day, and then see where that takes you? Or were you still thinking a bit about the competition and what they might do?
Yeah, I think that's a good thing about especially long course triathlon. It's of course the race dynamic can play a factor, and like in terms of, for instance, biking together with people and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it's just if I do my best race, then I'll be happy with that. So that's also a really comfortable thought for me going into race day, actually, that if I feel like I've been doing my best to prepare for it, I know that I will be able to execute my, like, the best I have on the day. Then I'm never disappointed after a race if I feel like I've done everything I can on the day. Or of course, you can be a bit disappointed if you know that you didn't, like, the shape wasn't there at the day, you had a bad day. But still, if I do everything I can on the day, then you can't do anything more than that. So I think that makes me actually not that nervous going into races, because the result will be what the result will be. I can only control my own efforts.
Yeah, and compared to short course, I think that it's not the beginning of the race, even though it still matters, but it's not the same thing that you can really completely lose your race in the first 100 meters of the swim in short course. And in long course, you have such a long, there's so much more time to make up for mistakes at the very start. So I think that that's maybe a big contributor to nervousness, especially in short course races.
Yeah, for sure. I really agree with that. It's, of course, I think also in long course, the level is just rising all the time. And I think it will be more and more important to not be too far back in the swim in the coming years. But the podium in Kona this year, actually, all of us were like 6 minutes down after the swim. So that's quite crazy, actually. So, but that shows that the swim isn't everything in a race that lasts for 8+ hours.
Yeah. So what was your race plan, more specifically in the swim, bike and run?
I didn't have that specific plan. I always had like some sort of thoughts of what I think I can do on the bike and the run. Like the bike, it's usually some watts I think I can hold. On the run, it's a pace. But of course, it's also dependent on how I feel on the day and the conditions. And I've never raced in conditions like in Kona before, but I had been feeling really good in training on the bike leading into the race. And I do like to go a bit by feel. So if it feels good, not like restricting myself too much. I think I'm like sort of my way of racing is usually that I rarely go out too hard anyway. I feel like I'm maybe more in the other direction where I also can tend to be a bit too careful sometimes. So it's definitely no point then to also restrict myself to be too careful. So I didn't really have that specific plan on the bike. I rode maybe a bit harder than I planned, and on the run I was really feeling the heat, so I ran maybe a bit slower than I would have wanted if I had felt super good. But I feel like I'm fairly good at also adjusting that just based on how it feels on the day. I don't really use like heart rate, for instance, that much during the race. I feel like it's, at least for me, it's really unpredictable. I don't really see a system in it, to be honest. Like, of course, there's some trends. If it's really long, really low over a long period, that's not good, or really, really high over a long period. But like from session to session, I can do threshold one day and feel really good, and the heart rate can be really low, and I can do threshold the next week and feel really good, and it can be really high. So that's not really something I can, like, I watch it, but I never use that to adjust my pace by it.
Yeah, I think you have your files on Strava, by the way, so listeners can go and have a look if they want to. I think, so you averaged, I think it was 236 watts on the bike, and the run pace was something like 408, 409, something like that from
memory.
Yeah,
something like that, I think.
And the run I checked now just before that, the first half was 406 pace, so that's 635 mile pace, and then the second half was 412, so a little bit of a drop, but pretty even for a marathon like Kona. And only about a 6 second per kilometer, or about 10 seconds per mile drop off. Was that something that you were you really conscious of that, of not going out too hard on the run to try to maintain a similar pace throughout the whole marathon?
I tried to not go out too hard, but at the same time, as I said, I didn't want to be like too careful either. So I did go out in a pace that definitely didn't feel comfortable. I saw that it wasn't really fast, but it felt really hard, actually. So I went out in a pace where I was thinking, really not sure if I can hold this. But I also felt I couldn't go out even slower than that, because, yeah, that you also need to, I mean, try to think you can run fairly well. And I saw that I wasn't, it would have been different if it felt really hard and I was running 3:45, then that would have been stupid. But I saw that the pace wasn't that fast, and I thought, like, I need to just try to stick with this pace and see if I can hold it. It didn't feel that much worse. It felt like quite uncomfortable from the start, and then it sort of just continued to feel uncomfortable, but it didn't get that much worse. So I was just, that was sort of what I was comforting myself with after a while. Like, at least it doesn't get worse. It's just like steady uncomfortable, and I can deal with that.
Yeah. That's good. And jumping back to the bike, how was the bike? Was it very variable? I guess once you broke away from the chase pack, you had the opportunity to really focus on your own pace or effort and power. But I don't actually know, did you try to hold it quite steady? Or what did the bike feel like? And was there a lot of variation there, especially in the first part when you were riding with the group?
Yeah, I wasn't actually riding that along with a group, because I was running out of T1 together with Laura. She rode really fast in the beginning, so I was like dropped right away basically. And then I rode with Kat because she had the problem with the ice in the helmet, so she was actually behind me out of T1, but she catched up to me quite fast, and we rode together. And I think we used like 40 minutes or something to get back up to where Lisa and Laura were. And then I might remember this wrong, but I think I just rode with them for like 10 minutes or something. At least it didn't feel longer. I think I was behind, and Laura did a quite long turn, and then I went to the front. And or I guess I don't know how long I was riding with them before I dropped them, because I didn't realize that I was dropping them. So, but I think it was, at least it wasn't for a long time. And I was, when I saw that I was alone, I was a bit disappointed by that as well, because when I caught off that group, I was thinking, like, this is a really nice group to ride with. And it is more fun to ride in a group. You have a bit more things to think about. And of course, you need to, if you're not in the front, you need to make sure you're in the right distance. And it's, I feel like Race Ranger for me is like sort of like a fun game a little bit, that you want to stay as close as possible, but you can never get into the red light. Yeah, it's just fun, I think, to ride in a group like that. So when I saw that I was alone, I was just like, oh, and it's still, I don't know how far it was left, but maybe 140K or something left. And I knew that I was also really, at least really far up to Lucy Taylor. But it also helped that I did catch some other people on the way there. But I think most of the ride, to get back to your question, I was just focusing on my own race, basically. And I think I rode fairly even watts for most of it. Of course, I also tried to just change it a bit with the terrain. Like, if it's uphill, I do go a bit harder, just because you get sort of more value for your watts there. And especially me, that is a bit heavier, it's also good to push a bit more there. But I think other riders, or some other riders, it's probably even more polarized than I am. I feel like, if for me at least, if I had gone too hard in the climb, that can like get your core temperature up more than you want too early in the race. So I was going a bit harder in the uphills, but not crazy much. I don't remember, maybe like 10, 20, maybe 20 watts harder for some sections, but never like, I was never close to threshold, for instance, during that whole ride, basically.
Yeah. And in the end, so your bike split was just 53 seconds slower than Taylor Nibbs. So that was a really, really strong bike. And also by the time you put into the, oh, I have a fly there. By the time you put into the chase or the pack that you were with Laura and Kat and Lisa and Marilyn was there for a while. So was that just, did you, in the training leading into the race, did you notice that you had really leveled up your bike compared to the, I mean, you alluded to that earlier, but did you feel that, yeah, your bike was on a different level than it had been in the previous races?
Yeah, for sure felt better on the bike than I did leading into both Hamburg and Le Classic, but I didn't think it was going to make that much of a difference. I pushed like a little bit higher watts in training, but still, it didn't feel like it was crazy. I just was more thinking like, I have improved a bit throughout the season, and I was just happy that I felt like my best bike shape of the year was leading into Kona, which is what you want, of course, since that was my main focus of the year. So when I were out on the bike in the group with Kat and Laura and Lisa, I was thinking like, this is a really good group. But I also knew that earlier that year in Hamburg, I actually struggled with the pace when I was riding with Laura and Kat, and I was dropped towards the end of that bike. Of course, I had some problem in that bike I had some mechanical problems, but I still felt like definitely the weaker rider of the three I was in that race. But I guess since the bike training had been good leading up to that race, I felt a bit more confident that I could like stay in the group, that I wouldn't be dropped from the group. But that was where I was at. I was thinking like, hopefully I can stay with this group today. I definitely didn't expect to break away from them, and I didn't get any splits either to that group the whole bike ride. It's a quite lonely bike ride for most of it. And I felt on the way back from Harvey, I didn't feel like I was pushing any crazy watts at all. I think it was a bit lower than the way out, but it was still like quite steady the whole way. And when I, obviously the last time I saw them was turning around at Harvey, and my gap wasn't really that big at that time. So when I heard 8 minutes when I ran out of T2, that was actually a big shock to me that the gap has gotten that big.
Yeah. Well, I think that, like you said before, you can, like, when you talk about the expectations for the race, you can hope to have a really good race when you have a really good day, and maybe also others have not their best day. And maybe that was part of what happened in the chase group, that they, at least what we've heard, that they didn't have their best bike days, but also probably starting to look at each other a bit and wanting others to do the work. So in that sense, you're similar to a bike race in some situations that happens when the breakaway kind of gets away and gets a big gap, and nobody in the peloton wants to really, really chase it down. But still, I think with the comparison with Taylor and being so close to her time, that also just puts into perspective that it wasn't just others having a bad day. It was really a super strong ride in itself. About getting onto the run, I heard actually that you had some strategizing going on with the help of the Precision Fuel and Hydration people and with the sports scientists there. So can you talk a little bit about that, about hydration and pacing? I think was also involved in that in T2 and the beginning of the run.
I did make a quite like detailed plan for the whole run, or for the bike as well, but with the Precision guys, and it's really nice that you can talk to them before the race and make like a strategy for that race specifically. It's of course a lot will be the same in each race, but it's also definitely differences, especially in Kona where it's that hot. So part of the strategy was also to not open too hard, as we were talking about earlier. I probably could have opened even slower, at least for the first case. It's especially like the first 2Ks or around that, it's nice if you're not pushing too hard. Yes, when you're starting running, do you want to get the sweat rate up enough? And if you push too hard before you have sort of started sweating the way you sweat in the run, it's easy to get a bit overcooked.
You build up, you can't get rid of, you accumulate just too much heat there. Yeah.
It's funny, it's like the same principle, just opposite. I do when I do heat training, then I would usually on purpose go out a bit hard, and after 10 minutes I will feel completely cooked, and then for the rest of the training session I just basically can't push any power if I'm doing on it on the bike, because I'm just cooked from the first 10 minutes where I just push quite hard in some heat environment. So I also guess I knew from my own experience that you don't want to end up in that place where I often am in heat training, where you just feel completely useless, basically. So I tried to hold a bit back on the first case. Looking back, and as I said, I probably could have run even slower the first case and then tried to like find a steady pace after that. But I didn't go out too hard either, so it was, I mean, just okay, I guess. And then what's really nice in Kona is that you have these six pro fluid stations. So I had half a liter of fluids with some carbs and salts as well in all of those. So I think that really helped me, because even though it was 8 stations every second K, sometimes that felt way too long, actually, because at least I was just so thirsty all the time, especially because of the heat there. And then since I had a lot of salts in those soft flasks I had as well, then I could drink a lot of water from the aid stations without getting the salt balance completely wrong. So the strategy was just, I drank all of my 6 soft flasks. So that was 3 liters of drinks, also a lot of carbs. And it was so nice. The bottles were cold as well. So I just had them in my suit, and it was felt so comfortable just having them with me. And of course, also drinking them. And in some races, you sort of need to force down the carbs a little bit, because you know you need them. But in this race, I was just trying to almost save it a bit, because I was just so sort of, I just really enjoyed drinking it. So yeah, that was a nice feeling. I didn't have any problems with my stomach or anything. And it was really easy to get the fluids down, because I was really hot then. I felt like I really needed it. So I just basically tried to drink as much as possible on the drinks on all the aid stations, and had that additional flasks with me. So I felt for me that worked out really well.
Do you have an estimate for how much fluid you consumed, or an average for the race, or something like that?
Yeah, I think the precision guys also made an estimate. I don't have it right.
I think they did, yes. I'll put a link in the show notes, because I don't have it in front of me.
If I remember correctly, I think it was estimated around 1.4 liter or something per hour on the run, at least. But it's also, of course, hard to really estimate it, because I just take as many cups as I can from the aid stations. Most of the cups, you don't really get that much water in from each cup. Like the cups are like so, yeah, just a little bit water in the bottom, basically. And of course, when you drink it while you run, you don't always get everything down either. But it sounds like a fairly good estimate. I had, as I said, at least 3 liters from those soft flasks, and then quite a bit from the aid stations as well. But that's more hard to really estimate.
Yeah. Did you use any, what heat mitigation strategies did you use during the race, other than what you already talked about with pacing, and of course hydration also helps with that? Did you use anything else, like how did you use ice and water dousing, things like that?
Yeah, I had tried to use ice really frequently. I had every aid stations, I took 1 cup of ice in the back of my suits. I actually had ice pockets both in the front and back as well. So when I just took a cup of ice in the back, it would actually stay like on top of my suit, which was really nice. And I took 1 cup of ice in the back and 1 in the front at every aid station. And that as well, I just felt like it was melting so fast. So after like a couple hundred meters, I was just like, oh, I want more ice. So it was 2Ks between each aid station-ish felt really long. I also tried to pour water over my head at every aid station as well. I did use that Omnis headband that a lot of people also use. Mm-hmm. If you pour water over that, it's at least you feel like a cooling effect. So I mean, everything that can make you feel more comfortable is good, I guess. So that was probably the main things, just ice, water, and try to drink enough.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything else about the race. Obviously, everybody listening has probably seen the race, so we know how the drama that unfolded. I guess let's take that as the final question. Like, what were you thinking when you first passed Lucy or saw that she had pulled out? I don't know if she was actually still there when you passed or if she had kind of moved to the side, but you must have seen somehow that she known somehow that she wasn't in the race anymore. And then Taylor later on, what were you thinking in those two instances?
Yeah, it was, first with Lucy, like people started to tell me on course that, oh, Lucy is struggling. And I was just thinking like, oh no, now you're just trying to, in some weird way, make me feel better or motivate me by saying that. But when I saw her, she looked great. So I was thinking like, there's no way she's struggling. And then I suddenly saw her stopping at the side of the road. Then I saw Reese there, and I was a bit, definitely really surprised by that. I didn't know, like, is she going to stop now or what is going on? But of course, I saw that she had people around, and I knew that I needed to also just focus on my race. But it's really, of course, not the way you want to pass other athletes. You want to beat everyone when they're having their best day and not when they're struggling. So it was not a really fun way to pass her, but it was also really surreal to know that I was then in second place. And it was the same with Taylor. I knew I was getting a bit closer to her, like from the splits I got. And then I needed to actually work quite hard mentally myself, because when I passed Lucy and I was in second, I was really, really happy with being in second, because I didn't imagine doing it any better than that at all. So I was thinking like, second is a dream case scenario here. And then people started to tell me, and I didn't think I would be able to catch Taylor at all anyway, but people started telling me like, you can actually win this. And then I was a bit like, almost a bit annoyed, because I was thinking like, oh, but I'm really happy in second. Don't push me to try to go harder now. I'm really tired and I'm in second, and second is really good. But then I needed to like sort of pull myself together a bit to think like, it is worth it to like give it your everything to try to win this. It might not work, but you need to at least try to catch her, of course. And then I really like sort of put myself together and try to get in that mindset like, you can do this. I started to gain more and more time on her, but I still knew not like, okay, it's 3K left. It's probably too late to, I probably won't catch her. And then I suddenly saw her as well, sitting on the side of the road there. Yeah, it was just so, I just didn't really understand what was going on. And it was really weird in a not good way to see both of them. Like everyone I passed in that run had already stopped. So it was a really weird feeling, and felt really sorry for both of them, and also like just scared to see what the heat can do to you. And especially I've never raced in those conditions in such a long race before. So, and when I saw two people who I think really know what they're doing in that situation, I was just also really afraid that something would happen to me. Even though it was quite close to the finish line at that point, I was really like thinking, "Whoa, you need to be careful now. Like you're actually in the lead now, and don't do anything stupid now that can sort of screw this up for you."
When you were chasing Taylor and you were tired and you were almost annoyed that you had to push, is there something other than the fact that you maybe have a chance of winning still? Is there anything else, any other mental strategies that you use to help yourself push harder, even when you're so far into the race, so tired, and you really don't really want to push? Do you break things up into really small chunks and just, or what mental strategies do you use to be able to push a little bit harder?
I think for me, it's just about really forcing myself, or identify when my mindset isn't really where it should be, and try to be aware of what I sort of should think about, because I think that's a problem I can have. And I think it's also quite normal if you're exceeding your own expectations, it's, or at least I get really just satisfied, and then it's hard to push when you're already in a place you're really happy with. So I think what helps for me to think is just, I know really well that I have had some races over the years where I have just been happy with where I am, or just haven't really been able to motivate myself to like push everything I have. And I know that when you are done with the race, you always regret that. And it's never a good feeling to know that you haven't given it your all. Even though I would have been happy with second, it still would have been like a bit bittersweet, I think, if I knew that I didn't really try to go for it, because I think that's the way you should race. And of course, the coolest way to race is just really give it your everything. So I think it's a bit, you know, Christian has this saying, he is always saying like, it hurts more to lose. And I'm not sure if I'm 100% there, but it's still like, it is really true that if you finish a race and you haven't given it everything, you will always regret that. And while during the race, it's hard to make yourself go harder if you're already hurting, but it's only for really, I think it's also helps me to think that it's only for a short period of time. After the race, you will feel so much better if you're able to do that. So I think that's actually my main motivation, and I don't really have any strategies around it. I just try to think that you sort of owe it to yourself to give it your everything, because I obviously have been training really hard for that race, and it's just sort of disrespectful to both to the other people, but also to yourself, to not give it your everything when you have been training and preparing for it for that long. And you obviously have other people helping you prepare, and you have the team around you. And I guess you just owe it to everyone to give it your best,
yeah,
even though it hurts.
Yeah, I mean, that makes complete sense. It is, I guess, it's quite impressive that you have that clarity of thought in the moment when you're so deep into the race that you can think about, if I don't push myself to my limit, basically, or to my maximum, then I will regret it after the race. Because I think that that's what why sports psychologists generally recommend, thinking about breaking things up into really small chunks, because that's the only thing you can concentrate on when you're really hurting. But you manage to actually be more rational than that, and know that from experience you are actually going to regret it if you don't push yourself and use that to drive yourself forward. So that's very impressive.
That's the thing. I maybe not think all those sentences I just said, but it is, as you said, about experience. And I just know that it doesn't feel good if I don't do that. So when people tell me like, you could win this, my first thought is just like, oh, don't say that. But my next thought is like, but you're actually right, I need to try. So
yeah,
that's about, it's always, at least for me, and I think that's really normal, you always have all these excuses in your head for not pushing, because it's obviously not comfortable. So, and I don't know, when people say they like enjoy pain, that either you're really weird or I just don't believe you completely, because it's not fun to be hurting at all, I think. So it's just about you reminding yourself of that, and the excuses will always be there, like, oh, you're in second, that's really good, you can just control this, or just also like, I guess, rational thoughts, but not the way I want to race. I also had a lot of these thoughts like, if you go too hard now, you will definitely blow up and then you will destroy your whole race. Like, don't risk it, you're in second, it's really good. But I think it's cooler to have that mindset that is, yeah, actually take a little bit of risk and try to win this race. So that's something I'm working on, but I actually think that I'm maybe not like naturally the most competitive, or with the person with the most competitive mindset. Like, I sometimes need to actually work on the will to wanting to win, if that makes sense, because it is why I'm doing the sport. But sometimes I can also just, it's really easy for me to sort of settle and be happy with where I am. So yeah,
I guess it's also something that will come, because this is your first season in 73 and Ironman racing. So if you compare to most of your results in short course, you've just taken a big step forward. So
that's a really good point, actually.
Even if you finish fifth in Kona, that's a massive result for you. So, but now you have finished, you have won, you finished second in the Pro Series, you you were sixth in the Samuel Free World Championship, so maybe that resets the bar a little bit, and but it that's takes some time.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. I'm just not used to winning, so I'm not used to having like big results, I guess. So then it's easier to just be happy, I guess. So yeah, it's a really good point.
I want to talk about the training you did leading into it as well. So you did Lake Placid, I think that was 12 weeks before Kona, and then you did Selamsee, the zone 3, 6 weeks before. So if we can look into those 12 weeks from Lake Placid, what did your training look like in that period?
Yeah, I think after Lake Placid, I had, as I usually have after an Ironman, like a couple easier weeks, and then I started training towards Selamsee and had some really good sessions leaning into Selamsee. So I felt like the shape was really good. I had like some of my best brick sessions. And then in the race in Selamsee, I just felt terrible. So I was really dropped on the bike, and like it was a hill there, and I was really dropped in the hill. But what was like more sort of concerning to me was that after the downhill, and usually I feel quite fresh if I get like some rest, but I just couldn't push power at all. So I felt so useless on the bike that day. And then also on the run, I ran basically the same pace as I did in both Hamburg and Lake Placid on the full distance, like marathon. So I was just, and it just felt so hard. So I was really like giving everything I had, and I was still running like in my marathon pace. So that, I don't know, I was a bit disappointed with that race, and was thinking like, oh, maybe the shape is not as good as I thought it were. But after that, I went to Font-Romeu, and I had 4 weeks of altitude there, and the training there was actually going really well the whole time. I just felt I didn't really have any problems at all. Like, of course, you're a bit tired some days, but I didn't have any like sickness or any like niggles or stuff like that. So like the training basically just went to plan the whole camp. And for me, that's the most important thing. Like if you have a bad session here or there, I don't really stress too much about it. But as long as I'm able to actually do the training and I feel consistent, or like at least somewhat consistent throughout many weeks of training, then that usually leads to quite good shape. So, and towards the end, when I did like some specific sessions, as I said earlier, the watts was a bit better than earlier that year, and I just felt really good. So it was a really fun camp.
Was your training very similar to what you had been doing into Hamburg and Lake Placid, or were there any changes other than, I assume, some heat training? But we'll get to that in a little bit. But other than the heat training, what was it very similar to what you had done before, or any changes?
Yeah, I would say it was really similar, at least to. Very similar to Lake Placid, I guess, because also before Lake Placid, I was in Font-Romeu before that race as well, and went down about the same time, like around 2 weeks before both of those races. And yeah, really similar. A lot of threshold and some specific sessions the first week, and then even more specific the last part of the camp. So I guess it also felt comfortable to do it in a way that I knew like worked quite well.
Yeah, it had worked well, so there's not too much need to change that. Just to point out to the listeners, newer listeners, that we did an interview just before Lake Placid, and then we discussed in detail what the training looks like, so including full training week. So listeners that haven't heard that interview, you can go back and have a look, and I'll put it in the show notes, the link to that. So for that reason, we won't go into detail now, since it was similar. But what I do want to ask about in more detail is the heat training you did for Kona. So can you describe that?
Yeah, as you said, I started to do some heat training in Font-Romeu. So I did some of the run, but most of them on the bike. I think like I didn't have any treadmill or anything like that. So I felt like it's easier to get the core temperature out up on the bike, because I didn't really use any climate room or anything. So I just used the bathroom where we lived, and what I found that worked quite well for that location, at least, was it wasn't any oven or anything in the bathroom. So what I did was just like 10 minutes or something before I started the session, I just turned on the shower, like really hot water. And when I got back into the room, like fully dressed with also a lot of clothes in addition to that, then the whole bathroom would be like really humid and really hot as well. So it was just working really well, I think. So, and as I said, a lot of clothes as well. And then I usually do just around 50 minutes an hour when I do heat sessions. And just, as I said, usually start out a bit hard, nothing crazy, but just a bit higher watts than I would usually ride on an easy ride, but like still usually less than LT1 watts, so not super high, but just to get the heart rate up and the core temperature up. And after just 10-15 minutes, I will already feel really warm at that time. So it's sort of interesting to just look at the heart rate and watt curves on sessions like that, because the watts on the end of the ride is just super low and the heart rate is super high. So I think like usually for the last part of those rides, it's maybe like 150 in heart rate and 130 in watts or something like that. And you know, when you have higher heart rate than watts, then something is not completely right, but it works well. And I just usually do heat sessions maybe at every other day or something like that. I try to often actually have it on the end of the day, just because you feel a bit sick after a heat session, basically, or at least I do. Like, it do really affect your body, right, to get the whole core temperature up like that. And I also like to have it on the same days as I have intervals, if that's possible. So, for instance, if I have a run interval, I can do some heat sessions after that. So I can sort of have some days that is just easy and other days where I sort of, if I look at a heat session as sort of a hard session, then it's nice to have it on the same day as other hard sessions.
And did you do these heat sessions from the start of the Fontainebleau camp, so throughout the 4 weeks, or when did it start?
I think I started after 2 weeks. So I had like maybe 2 weeks of heat training in Font, if I remember correct. And then I also had almost 2 weeks in Kona as well, so where it was obviously more. Just every session was a bit like a heat session there. It was like.
And had you done any heat training earlier in the year for any of the other races or just in general?
I need to think. I actually don't think I've done any heat training this year, actually. I've never really done heat training like for the blood plasma purposes. I usually focus on altitude training, and I mainly do heat training in like acclimatization for races in the heat, and I haven't really raced in the heat this year. So yeah, it was actually the first time this year I did heat training.
Yeah.
Which is nice. I don't really enjoy heat training, so.
Yeah. It's also a mess to clean up and all of that.
Sure. Always had the washing machine ready.
Yeah, yes. If you only did, it's normal to do 50 minutes to 1 hour. That's kind of standard protocol. But did you ever do that in combination with, I don't know, going out for 2-3 hours before just a normal ride, and then you finish with the last 50 minutes or 60 minutes indoors doing heat training? Or did you do 2-a-day rides where you would do a separate ride earlier in the day and then you would do a shorter heat session later? Did you combine your biking with the heat training in that way at any point?
Yeah, I think I did a couple sessions like that. It's, for me, it doesn't really matter like how you get the heat sessions in, as long as you do it in a way that sort of makes sense with the rest of it. So yeah, I think I had a couple days I did that. And actually also another aspect with like heat training is I've never actually done like passive heat training, like sauna or stuff like that. But it's also important when you do heat training to try to avoid freezing too much. If you're feeling really cold, that could sort of reduce the effect you get from the heat training. So that was a bit challenging actually in Fontainebleau, especially the last week there, because it was suddenly, the first week was the weather really nice, but it was suddenly just the temperature dropping so much. So the last week we had a lot of ice on the car and it was just like icy roads and everything. So it was almost hard to train outside because I didn't really want to expose myself too much to the cold weather. So then it was also just all about trying to dress up as much as possible also when training outside.
Yeah, yeah. And how much in those heat sessions, how much do you wear? What are you getting dressed in?
I wear a lot, just like wool socks, shoe covers, have like wool, and then like a warm cycling jacket and a warm cycling pant, and also just like some sort of heat suit on top of that. It could be like stuff like just a normal painting suit works really well, and obviously gloves and everything.
Yeah, it does get pretty brutal with all of that in a tiny bathroom with the shower running. Yeah, I think that's pretty much. Is there anything else that comes to mind about the heat training that I haven't asked about that is interesting about how you do the heat training?
No, not really. I also have like a core sensor. I try to look a bit at that as well. I think in the race in Kona as well, like my core was actually never crazy high. I think it was just about 31 towards the end there, which is interesting. It's the same, same with dark race.
Just above how much did you say?
39, I think.
39, okay. Yeah.
So I feel like it's always cool to have, like the more knowledge you have, the better, but it's a bit the same as I said with hard rate that I still adjust the training more by feel, but I think it's the more like parameters you have to sort of adjust your feel, that's also good in a way. As long as you don't get too caught up in it, it's always good to have, be able to sort of measure everything you can.
So do you have an idea on average, roughly what temperature would you get up to in those heat training sessions based on the core sensor?
Yeah, it's really rare that I get past 39. So usually, I don't know, 38.7, maybe something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know if we're talking about a fired heat session, I also tend to drink really much during my heat sessions. I know also some people have like reduced how much water in or fluid intake they have just to get that dehydration effect. But I think for me, when I do heat training, it's also important to just find a good balance between everything. And I don't want the heat sessions to affect my other sessions too much. So I've never been restricting that during heat training.
Yeah, I think it used to be in the, maybe 5-10 years ago in the research, I think a lot of the studies were like that. They restricted hydration, and that's why people were doing it. But now, I think from a training perspective and from a coaching perspective, you have to be a bit more practical and keep things in balance. You still have to train the next day. But also in the research now, more recently, I looked into it, and the recommendation seems to be to actually stay hydrated and not do that restriction. So I think it's more of a something that still lives on from the earlier research, or that's my impression of it.
Interesting. Yeah, because my impression is still different schools out there when it comes to that. And I guess if you do it that way, you need to be even more cautious how that will affect the next days and stuff like that. And I feel like I get a good effect anyway. So then it's just more comfortable during the session. And also, I don't want the heat sessions to take away the opportunity or make it harder for me to do intervals in the next days. So yeah, that's just the protocol we have been using it. And it works well, I think.
Yeah. I'm going to ask one more question about the training, which is a two-part question. So maybe it's two questions. What was your biggest training week that you did in the lead-up to Kona? In hours, and what was the biggest simulation or specific session that you did?
So I'm trying to open Training Peaks now because I have no idea. Yeah, it looks like the biggest week I had there was 30 hours and 49 minutes.
Okay. Yeah.
And the week before I had 29 hours. So yeah, around that mark. And the biggest session I did was in the last week of the camp. I did a bike session that was like 4.5 hour with around 2 times 2 hours of race pace on the bike. So basically that's like great. A race simulation. And I found a place that was actually, the road I was riding at was really similar to the Kona course, I'd say, with like, it's sort of flat, but it's still up and down, like rolling hills. And after that ride, I had like an hour rest or something. And then I did a 30K run with 2x14 minutes. No, 14K. with also a race pace, but it was actually way faster than race pace. than what the race pace turned out to be. But it was in way cooler conditions there. So that wasn't like a heat session at all. So it was definitely easier to run fast when I did that session.
So what pace did you run there?
I think I did around 3:47 or something.
and what, so that's, yeah, it's in just in mile pace, it's close to 6-minute miles, not quite, but almost 6:05 maybe. And
probably
for American listeners. And on the bike session, what watts did you push for the 2-hour intervals?
I can check now because I don't remember that. But I remember that session, like that whole session felt really, really good. So I was on the bike, I was almost thinking like, is my parameter showing me the wrong numbers here? I had 2:35 on the first hour and 2:43 the second 2 hours. But yeah, as I said, it was of course different conditions. And I had a break before the run, but also on the run, it just felt really easy to run that pace. So that was the session that gave me most confidence, I think, for the race, where I was thinking like, if the race has been today, I would have had a really good race.
Yeah. Well, the bike power was very similar to what it ended up being in the race. And of course, the run a bit slower in the race, but with the conditions, I think it's that's a very something that could be expected.
Yeah, I didn't really expect to run 3:47 in the race. So maybe it was stupid to run like that much faster in training, but it's fun to run faster. So
yes, of course. Yeah. I don't want to ask or to have a long discussion about Marbella, but I just want to briefly ask you what your thoughts were, how the race went for you.
Yeah, I was fairly happy with the race. I think it's also like important to keep your perspective on things. And I think like a year ago, if I had been number 6, I would have been really happy with that. I think so, like position wise, I was really happy, but I was of course still many minutes down from the leaders. Like from Taylor and Lucy. I was really happy Taylor and Lucy had good races there, though. I think it was really cool to see how they bounced back from Kona, and that's really impressive to me how they were able to just also mentally get ready for that race, and obviously also physically with the heat exhaustion. But for my race, the swim was good, and I lost a lot of time on the bike, which was also expected in a way. I don't really feel that confident in the climbs. I don't feel like a climber, but it's something I want to work on, and I think it's still really cool that the courses are really different. But obviously that was a course with a lot of elevation, and I did lose a lot of time in the climbs, and I've actually never raced in a course like that where that's like the watts are so, or the pace is so on and off in a way. So looking back next time, I think I just should try to go even harder in the climbs. As I said, I can be a bit like too careful maybe sometimes and just afraid to really blow up. So yeah, but I think still my biking isn't like, my watts per kilo isn't just good enough to keep up with the other girls in front for that race. But I did really enjoy the course and took some time in the downhills at least. So, and the run was fine, but I was maybe, talking back to mental strategies, I wasn't maybe in the best pushing mindset that day either. I was at that point really happy with the season, and also just leading into Marbella, I just found it a bit hard to really, really push myself in training and also on race day, because I was just satisfied with the season in a way, which is of course really good. But yeah, mentally, I wasn't really able to dig that deep, which is also part of being a good athlete, is to be able to do that, right? So in the end, I was really happy with sixth, and I really enjoyed being out during course. And I think because of Kona, I just didn't feel any pressure for myself, at least to perform there, because I was truly looking at Marbella as a bonus race at that point, because I had already just exceeded all my expectations for the race, which was, or for the season, which was really nice.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally fair. I don't really have any follow-ups on that, but it was good to hear your perspective on that. And to finish off, what are your goals for next year?
I think I will do the Pro Series again. That's the plan right now, at least. But I haven't actually made the season plan. I don't know which races I'll do yet, but I do want to do the Pro Series again. Kona will still be my main goal. So, like, going into this year, I didn't have any really clear goals for the championships, but I feel like now that I have actually won in Kona, I do feel like it's a natural goal to want to do that again. I really do want to win it again, even though I know that will be extremely hard to do. Like, the level is always rising, and I know not everyone had their best day this year, but I guess it just gives you confidence to have had that race. And I think now I just want to really try to repeat, I guess.
Is there something, like, one or two main things that you want to improve for Kona next year to feel because as you said, it's always, well, you never know, but you can always expect that it will get faster and faster and it will be harder and harder to win. So what are the main things that you want to improve, whether that's on race day itself or something that you want to improve in training, like just improve your general level in something?
Yeah, I think a big one is not being that far back after the swim, like 6 minutes. As I said, this year it worked out, but I think with the complete athletes like Taylor and Lucy, for instance, like, they're on their best day, they're so good riders and runners that if you're 6 minutes back, it's like you have zero chance to catch those 6 minutes later on. So definitely being closer after the swim. And I think, like, if I can ride around the same as I did this year, but ideally ride the same, or I guess even better if it's a bit faster, but like ride around the same, but use a bit less energy on it, so I will actually be able to run better than I did this year. That will be the way I see it, like, most realistically for me to improve for next year. So hopefully swim a bit faster, run a bit faster.
Yeah, makes sense.
I feel like I have the potential for it, at least, but it's something completely else to do it, of course.
Yeah. Well, it will be really exciting to follow you in the Pro Series and especially in the championship races. So good luck. And yeah, I guess now enjoy a bit of downtime, or maybe you're still training, but at least no pressure of racing. And thank you for taking the time to come on again. Really appreciate it. And yeah, that's it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I hope that you enjoyed that interview. You can find the show notes on scientifictriathlon.com/670. And like I said, I really recommend going back and listening to, if you didn't already, or re-listening to my previous interview with Solveig, which I thought was really good, and especially in terms of the breakdown of her training in great detail. So at least for me, that's always one of the most interesting things to listen to. And we did that in that July interview with Solveig. In the podcast app, wherever you're listening to this episode, if you scroll down in the description to the section, what should I listen to next? I also have a bunch of other related episodes that I think you'd like, if you like this one. So you can always go and check out that section for any episode you're listening to. Especially if you're running out of content to listen to, then that's a great way to get some more content that you might have missed before for your next long ride or run. Now, just to finish off a little bit of promotion for what we do at Scientific Triathlon, we do coaching, full-on individual coaching. We do customized training plans and consultations and ready-made training plans. So there's something for every taste and need and budget. And you can check out more about all of these services on scientifictriathlon.com. With coaching specifically, I talked about this in a previous episode, that one of the best ways for me that I measure the success of, or the quality of our coaching, is how long athletes stay with us. And the average duration that athletes have been staying with us is more than 24 months, which is really great, because of course that also includes athletes that just recently started 1 month ago. So it's not just athletes that have stopped with coaching. It includes the athletes that are with us now and might have started recently. So this is a superb number, well above industry standard. And for us, that shows that we're doing a good job. And if you're looking for coaching, I hope that you would give us a shot and reach out. We can have a discussion and see what your needs are and if it would be a great fit. We would love to help you and work with you. So reach out if you're interested in that. If not, check out the other options we have, ready-made training plans, getting great reviews, great feedback, and great success, really. Lots of PBs and qualifications for world championships and so on using simply ready-made training plans. So they work. And consultations as well as a one-off option, or customized training plans as an in-between between ready-made training plans and coaching. All of those services and products are described in detail on scientifictriathlon.com. So have a look there. And yeah, hopefully we can help you achieve your goals in 2026. And finally, big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration, that you can find on precisionfuelandhydration.com. If you're looking for high quality, practical and tasty fueling and hydration products, make sure to try Precision Fuel and Hydration. And don't forget to take 15% off your first order with the code TTS2025. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.